This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Andrew and enter promo code Andrew at checkout. HelloFresh.com. Receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Andrew30. Remember, go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Andrew30 to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. Thank you to HelloFresh. And by Audible. Get a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial at audible.com/Andrew or text Andrew to 500-500.
What the Tech?
Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Jan. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm not in my studio right now.
I can see that.
We were going to do the show on Tuesday, but I had a very important doctor's appointment that I had to make, and I'm in my office right now. And this beautiful sign behind me speaks the truth. Paul does love Andrew.
Sure. The weird thing is that sign's actually in that room all the time.
And that's not even my sign. I have no idea. I'm not even in my office right now. We do have a lot to talk about. It could be two different people. For people watching this on video, I got the Galaxy S9 Plus. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of comments to make about it because this is my first dive into Android in about a year. So it's been exactly a year when I started using the iPhone as my everyday phone. And it's, I don't know, Paul. I mean, you do this all the time where you kind of go back and forth between Android and iOS. And, you know, this was the first time that I took like a year off of Android. And I'm having a real difficult time adjusting back to it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I it may be too late for me.
Yeah. You made an interesting choice in some ways because the Samsung Galaxy S9 Plus or whatever is particularly complicated, even from an Android perspective, you know, because there's so much going on that phone, like Android or Samsung just
so much
piles it on, you know, and it's,
yeah,
you way must have noticed this, like from the moment you open the box, even the stuff in the box is kind of crazy.
It's like five headphones and wires,
yeah, all this
and
stuff. Little doodads,
all the stuff that you got to wrap out. Yeah. You got everything is like in a plastic container that you got to like peel open like candy.
Yeah, you open up the an iPhone box and it's like the Ark of the Covenant. Like light shoots out of it, and you know, you know, the Samsung. It's like a bunch of crap falls all over the floor. And it's like welcome to Android.
Yeah, you know. Listen, by the way, a lot of positive, and I also have a lot of negative that I want to talk about. So before the Android people start telling me how I'm a total, I'm incompetent, I have no idea what I'm talking about, and I'm an Apple fanboy, I have to tell you, one of the reasons primarily, and this is my tease into this topic before we talk about our sponsor, is that I have become so engulfed in the iOS experience where it's going to be very difficult for me to leave this, to abandon iOS, because I'm so tied into it now.
Interesting.
And that's part of the problem.
I go back and forth, right? So I find the transition to be fine. But it's literally because I use both systems all the time. I would imagine if you've been using iOS for a while, iPhone, and you know, things just work, it's kind of a nice little deal. Like I could imagine going to the Samsung in particular would be difficult for sure.
Yeah. I have this to talk about and a whole lot more actually on Theroux.com. You posted a you started reviewing the HP Envy X2, which I'm very interested in. This is a Qualcomm device.
Yes, it is.
And I'm very curious what the battery life's like, what the performance is like, a whole lot more. I mean, I think they were saying that it delivered 20 hours of battery life and it's always connected. I'm curious to find out if that's true or not. Obviously, we'll save that for the next topic. But before we do, I want to take a moment and talk about our great sponsor, Suncast. And it's Casper. I was going to do the old radio thing and start being like, who's our sponsor right now? You know, like Howard would do. Sure. Guys, I've spoken about Casper mattresses for, God, how many years now, Paul? We've been talking about this. And my first, actually, this is actually really funny. And this is not I'm going to do my Andrew line. This is not part of the read, but my first Casper mattress, they sent it over, and I was supposed to be on vacation at that time. I was supposed to be in Mexico, and my flight got canceled. I ended up not going on vacation with my wife for our anniversary. Instead, we got a Casper mattress, and she kept saying how she goes, listen, so what did you do? Trade in the vacation for the mattress? Because it was so phenomenal. I mean, it feels like $1 million, this thing. And it's excellent. Why is it excellent? Well, I can tell you from my own firsthand experience that, you know, I suffer from a terrible back issue. I have 4 herniated discs. I got a herniation in my neck. I got 4 in my lower back. And the mattress that I sleep on is a important part of my everyday living. I can't pick a cheapo mattress. I can't pick a super soft mattress. It's only a very select type of mattress I could actually sleep on. And by the way, this is not an endorsement. This is not a doctor's endorsement. This is nothing like that. This is just my personal experience. And I had purchased a very expensive mattress many years ago, and I regretted it every single day. It was way too soft. And this is going to one of these big box stores, and I slept on this thing for like 10 minutes, and they pinpointed. They said, oh, look, your legs are a 2, but your back is a 4, and this is the mattress you need. And all wrong. It was the worst experience ever. I absolutely hated it. It was terrible. So when I got Casper to come on board as an advertiser, they sent me a mattress and said, listen, we want to get your honest opinion of what you think this is. Phenomenal. It's been a great night's sleep ever since. And they have a phenomenal offer for you guys. Get $50 off select mattresses by visiting Casper.com/Andrew and use the promo code Andrew at checkout. Guys, don't just believe me. Paul sleeps on a Casper mattress. Paul in his guest room, he has a Casper mattress. So this is something that we both use and absolutely love. And you will too. And they have some great stuff for you guys. Little backstory here. It's all made in the USA. You got a 100-day risk-free trial. So listen, we spend 1/3 of our lives on a mattress. It's important that you sleep on the mattress before you commit to it, right? So that's why Casper offers you a 100-night tryout. This is great. Phenomenal quality, great stuff, great people, and a great offer. $50 off towards your select mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/Andrew and using the promo code Andrew at checkout. I want to thank Casper for supporting the show. And of course, terms and conditions do apply. Let's start off with the Galaxy S9 Plus. You have yours, right?
I do.
Before I tell you what I've experienced. So I've had it. You've had it a couple days more than me. I've had it since Friday. And I used it primarily as my main phone all weekend because I was, you know, I kind of wanted to try out the camera. I went out for St. Paddy's Day with my wife and kids. The kids got belligerently drunk. You know, the normal, right? Yes. Is that what you do with a 2-year-old? No, sure. We have this tradition where we get together with our friends and we went out and I took my phone to snap the photos. The camera's stunning.
Yeah.
It's a great camera. Yeah. But there's something called less is more, right? They may have given us a little too many options here.
Yep. And that's true everywhere, by the way.
I mean, but that's true everywhere. So before I go and dive into this, including the camera, What? Give me your overall opinion on this phone. Compared to the iPhone X, obviously, because that's the major competitor here, right? That's a flagship for Apple. So what do you think of this?
Right. First of all, I love it. I think the nicest design in smartphones. It's only a slight evolution, obviously, of what they did last year, but they only needed a slight evolution. I prefer it to the iPhone from a form factor perspective. You know, the iOS versus Android thing is a different conversation. I honestly would say I probably prefer iOS overall for a variety of reasons, but you know, Android has matured to the point where it's obviously very, full featured and useful and usable, whatever. The camera's fantastic. In my own testing, it falls short of the camera in the Pixel 2 XL. And I'd like to go into a bit of detail about that later, but I think for most people, they would actually disagree with that assessment. And I'll explain why, but the camera is fantastic. It's absolutely at the top of the class. It's great. The iPhone X camera is great too. And you know, just as good in many ways. Their version of Android is fine. Like, I don't have a problem with it. If I do decide to keep this phone, I'm probably going to keep it. If I decide to use it as my daily, you know, use smartphone, probably would look into getting the Google launcher on there, if only so I could use Google Assist or the Google app off of the home screen. I prefer that to the Bixby stuff, which is useless to me.
Oh, it's terrible, actually.
Yeah, I hate it. So I did. I disabled the Bixby button. I'm using Google Assistant off of the home button when you do a long press. But the one thing I can't get rid of is that screen off to the left of home. On a normal Android phone, that's the Google app, and it gives you. I actually use it every day. What is it?
It's their news thing, right?
It's a Bixby based. It tries to find stuff. You know. It's their take on the Android thing. And this is kind of my central complaint about the Samsung. They duplicate a lot of the things that are already in Android, and they often do so in such a way that is inferior to what's already in Android. You know, so they have their own calendar app, they have their own email app, they have their own assistant. You know, there's all this stuff. And
so actually, the email app is one of the things that I don't hate.
Well, the point isn't, I shouldn't even look, the point isn't so much the quality of it. The point is just that it's there, you know, like there's just so much. Yeah. There's just so much stuff. To be fair to Samsung, some of the changes they make to Android, I actually really, really like, right? So for example, one of the general things about Android that I prefer over iOS is the way the home screen and then the all apps screen works. On iOS, you've got home screens and all your apps are there. There's nothing you can do about that except put them on secondary screens or put them into folders. On Android, the way it typically works is you have the same setup with home screens, but you can configure, but you don't have to have all your apps there. There's a separate all apps interface. So that already is better than iOS. They also give you the ability to put icons wherever you want, which is like sort of an obvious thing to me that iOS doesn't
do. And you could change the grid layout. I mean, you could modify the grid layout and the icons.
It's great. But the thing that Samsung does over and above the normal Android thing, which I like even better, is they let you have folders inside the all apps list, right? So instead of like scrolling through a huge screen full of icons, they actually create some folders for you. Like they have Samsung apps and you can put all your Samsung apps in like a folder and they're not cluttering the view of the apps. Like it's kind of a nice additional set of organization that is unique above what's offered in Android. And I the look and feel of it to me is nice. I mean, you probably experience this. You will spend days configuring this thing. The amount of time it takes to go through every little settings interface. And by the way, you have to do it because there are some really vital things that are not on by default or maybe are not optimal by default. You're going to want to do
it. What did you find? Okay, so I want to talk about that. So that was the first thing that I noticed. Then the customization on this phone, and I'm not familiar with the S8. I don't know if it was like that on the S8, but on the S7 and the S6, which I had, and the S5, it wasn't like that. You didn't have all the customization that you do on this phone. If you go into settings, like you could customize the sensitivity of the touch screen. You could customize what the home button does on the bottom. So I've actually customized it that I could unlock it with the home button. You could customize how many different login methods you have. The home screen. I mean,
it goes on and on. We don't have enough time to go through the whole list of things. It's amazing how many things there are. The two that stand out to me.
The display, the blue filter, the font size, the screen resolution.
The resolution. Easy mode. That was in the S8, by the way. So the two that stick out in my mind that I think are important are Samsung reverses the order of the buttons on the navigation bar in the bottom. So you've got like a back button, a home button, and then I think it's called apps button, or like it's basically like
reverse compared to what? Just Android in general?
Yeah. So if you're coming to Samsung from any other Android phone and you get to this thing, that's going to screw you up. I prefer it in the normal organization where back's on the left and they give you that interface. You can switch the order of the buttons. So, okay, great. So no problem. They, for whatever reason, theirs is opposite, but they let you switch it back. That's awesome. But the other thing they do that is just, I love this. I mean, I love this because you think about it. You know, you look at your phone. To use your phone, you're looking at it. A lot of text on the screen. You're looking at lists of things. You know, no matter what the UI is, there's going to be text going on. On normal Android, you only have two options to control the size and the way that text looks. There's a general screen zoom feature that zooms all elements on the screen by degrees, you know, 110%, 125%, whatever it is. And, you know, obviously, if you have bad vision, you might want the icons to be big or whatever. That's neat. Yep. And then they offer a font size slider as well. So you can go small, medium, large, whatever size fonts, and it's fine. If you use the iPhone or iOS, you know that there are additional controls. They're under accessibility, but they let you do things like add, like make all the text bold. And this is actually a really neat thing to do if you're hard of vision, if you have vision issues. And a lot of friends that I have who are love iOS for that reason, because they can bold all the text. It makes it easier to see.
My father.
But on
my
the father's Samsung, like that. Yeah. On the Samsung, they go the additional step, and that's what you were just showing. First of all, they have multiple fonts that you can choose. You don't have to accept just the default system fonts. And some of them have, I think the correct term for fonts is like heavier weights. And what that means is they're basically the strokes are all a little bit thicker. And the effect is something that in a word processing program would be called like semi-bold. So in other words, you have a font that's a normal weight or thickness or whatever. You could have a light version of that where it appears to be thinner. You have a semi-bold version that's a little bit thicker. And then, of course, a bold version and larger versions and so forth. That little addition over Android, the stock Android, just the ability to have a different font and to choose one that is what I would call a semi-bold font, is it makes I, every time the screen comes on, every time I look at the notification shade or any list in any application, whatever it is, it makes me smile. Like it is so beautiful to look at. And the fact that you can customize it according to how you want is, I think, in many ways, the point of Android. You know, it's the perfect example of why this platform can make sense. You know,
it absolutely does. You know, and I've been asking a lot of people about this, right? Like, I'll give an example. My father, he has a vision issue. He has something called Best disease, and it impacts. It's a genetic issue, right? It's passed down, but I don't have it, luckily. But the way that it works is that there's like a little dot in the back of your eye, and if this thing over time it starts spreading, it's like a little egg yolk, and it starts spreading, and it could potentially make you blind, right? My father has it on both eyes, and it's like at the corners, so it's spreading a little bit. So he has like a delay in response, and he can't sometimes. It depends on the day. So for him, when he texts a message, he actually speaks it because he can't see all the letters that he's typing. On Android, it's not as easy. You know, the text-to-speech, for example, it's not that great from my own experience.
Yeah. No,
you know, it's like those little things. But overall, who's buying this phone?
Well, everybody. It's probably. Well, everybody.
But this was the interesting conversation I had on Twitter when I was putting out, I got the S9 or I'm getting the S9 or something like that. And then the other message was, I'm surprised how much I dislike the phone. And everybody said, iOS sucks because you can't customize and you can't do this and you can't do that. And my question is, give me a reason why, if I'm in the price bracket, right? Why would I pick this instead of this? Why would I pick Android over iOS? And you know, I really couldn't get an answer as far as the layman, right? As far as the common person that's going into a Verizon store. I haven't gotten that.
Look, both these things are different kinds of compromises, right? So on iOS, you give up a little bit of control. But you know, I'm reminded of the argument that some people still make for Windows Phone. It's like, you know, I can't get past Windows Phone because it has tiles, and I love the tiles. You know, I love the little live updates and whatever. And it's like, you know what? I'm sorry. For most people, the interface on a phone is apps, and you go into an app and you open the app, you do that whack-a-mole thing. And I always kind of made fun of it, but the truth is, it's become a muscle memory for people. You go into mail, you look, you go into calendar, you look, you go into Twitter, you know, people go in and out of the apps, and notifications appear at the top of the screen to alert you that something new has happened. You can click on it. Or tap on it and go right to that app. That's kind of a red herring kind of a thing. So as far as the customization thing goes, I just pointed out an example where, you know, Android has better customization features than iOS does. Yeah. And I appreciate that functionality. Like, I like it. But the truth is, so what? I mean, you're going to spend hours like sitting there playing with your stupid phone, like making it look exactly the way you want. Like, it just
I say nobody, most people that are using smartphones are not doing that. We
right. That's my point. Most people,
the show, the people hosting the show, we do this.
This is the disconnect I deal with all the time, and it goes in both directions. You know, it could be on Twitter, it could be comments on my website, it could be people email me. They're like, Paul, you said, and then it's some perfectly defensible statement that's not an absolute, and that's not true because I do this. And it's like, you know, people have trouble separating their anecdotal personal experiences from the broader needs of the mainstream of most people. Yeah. And so I'm not perfect. I have my own biases. I have my own personal opinions and all that kind of stuff. But the difference between me and, you know, that person who was complaining is that I've been reviewing software products and hardware products for decades. And I have to put myself in the position of other people and try to understand how this would work for different scenarios. I don't review things how they work for me. Although sometimes when things work really well, I do switch into a mode where it's like, well, interesting. Could I use this thing myself? Could this replace something else that I'm using? You know, that, but that's a different discussion. That's not the review. That's Paul's personal, you know, needs and preferences, whatever. So,
you know, well, we've said that many times.
I'm sorry.
Right?
Just real quick. Hold on. Sorry. I just want to make sure.
We got that weird delay going on.
Yeah. I just want to make sure I just don't want to forget this because, there is a thing where people have a hard time understanding that no one else feels exactly the way they do. There are iOS people who feel very strongly about the iPhone or whatever, and they cannot understand why anyone could ever use an Android phone. And on the reverse side, there's the exact same thing. Android people are like, who could use an iPhone? You can't even customize where the icons go on the home screen. Well, the answer to that question is Apple sells 75 million of those things every quarter. A lot of people. So the audience size on both sides is a billion plus. There are a lot of people who can use both of these things. You need to kind of, not you, Andrew, but I mean the audience, you know, you need to understand that your needs are not necessarily universal. And the iPhone 10 is a beautiful phone. iOS 11 certainly has its little issues, but it's a mature operating system. Yes, it has its quirks and its limitations, but you get a payback in the form of performance that never goes away, reliability that never changes, simplicity that is world class. It's a just works experience.
Yeah.
You know, some people prefer choice. That's cool. You have Android, you can have it. You know, it goes both ways. That's all. I just wanted to make sure that that's part of this conversation because you coming to Android from an iOS perspective, you're going to run into things where you're like this isn't as good or this is better. And that's the right approach. Not this thing is different from what I used to, so it sucks. You know,
we've done the show for almost 8 years now, right? 7-8 years.
Yep.
And I was an Android user for 7 years of those years. And I said to myself, I will never go to iOS because I feel like I have to use Android in order to comment about it, in order to discuss it and give a fair overall opinion because I'm in both environments. I have an iPad, I have a secondary iPhone. So I kind of was in both environments until I took the dive to 100% because my work phone became my life phone. You know, that's just how I mix everything together. It's a flaw of mine, but it became my everyday phone. So now I'm separating again. And it is a major, major difficulty now for me. You know, because I've gotten so used to it and so comfortable because I went head first. And I always said, if I go head first into iOS where I'm Mac and iOS all together, it's going to be a very difficult transition for me to go back. And, you know, I kind of was right. And I want to talk about that transition. I want to talk about what I do like about this phone. And again, beautiful phone, phenomenal phone. I don't know why anybody that doesn't have these special needs and special customization would say, you know what? I'm done with iOS. I'm going to go over to Android because I'm going to tell you, it's not an easy transition. I think Android to iOS, much easier.
Well, okay. Much easier. I don't have an opinion on which is easier. I go back and forth, but I think there are cases to be made. You're using Android.
I don't know what's happening
here. You're tired of the performance rot. You're tired of all the stupid things that Samsung puts in there. And you get an iPhone and you're like, oh.
I'll give an example, Paul. My phone, I swear, I don't have anything going. It's playing music. My Android right now. I have no idea from where. Sure. I don't have an app open. I swear to God, there's no apps open. I can't turn it off. I wish I was joking right now. and it just went away. I have no idea where this media is playing from. I don't have it. I have no apps open. And that proves my point.
No, it's not necessarily. I mean, the flip side, though, is that
the phone.
I could also imagine someone who's an iPhone user and they've been come accustomed to the safe and error-free Apple experience. And they, you know, maybe it's gotten a little bit boring. Maybe the iPhone 10 came out. Yeah. And they want a bigger screen than that. They want they want what I think is the prettiest and best design in smartphones today, which is the Samsung Galaxy S9 Plus. You know, you're going to take advantage of certain things that were not available to you on iOS. There are advantages to Android, right? But you're also going to have to deal with the negative too. I mean, but that's the thing. That's what I mean. I think in both directions, there are reasons to do, you know, to make that switch, and there are reasons not to.
Yeah. I want to continue this and I want to talk about the stuff that I do like and I don't, you know, a little bit more, because this is a big topic and a lot of people, I've seen a lot of reviews and I don't know, man, I feel like I woke up one day and now I don't agree with any of these reviewers anymore. And I think, and I'm starting to really feel like everybody's inserting their own bias into how they're judging these devices, good and bad. I want to kind of go into that.
Sure.
And a whole lot more. But before we do, I want to thank another one of our great sponsors, and that's HelloFresh. I'm a big fan of this because it keeps me disciplined. One thing I don't have, when I fall off the wagon when it comes to eating and dieting, it's a very difficult journey for me to get back into it. And something that HelloFresh has done for me is essentially has set up my meals every day. They're healthy options are great. And it's set it up where I know what I'm eating every day. And I can kind of predict that, you know, for dinner, we're having this. So I will eat accordingly throughout the day. You know, it's almost like forecasting my life, my meals. So this is the great thing about HelloFresh. They have a great offer for you guys. Since we've teamed up with them, they're offering $30 off your first week of delivery when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Andrew30. When you sign up. So this is a great thing. This is how it works. You choose a delivery day that works for you. And let's say you're going away on vacation. Guess what? You can put it on pause. If you're out of town, you're going away. You don't have to worry about, you know, or let's say you decide that you're going to eat out a couple times that week and you could pause it for that week. It's great. Everything comes pre-measured, labeled meal kits. So you know exactly what ingredients to use and it goes with what recipe. So it's foolproof. I actually, sometimes it's not foolproof for me because I like to have a little bit of vino when I'm cooking, and it becomes my drunk kitchen, essentially, where I'm making up stuff. So this is great. It keeps me on track, right? So with HelloFresh, they offer a wide variety of chef-curated recipes that changes weekly. So you're not getting the same thing every single week. Three plans to choose from. You got the classic, got the veggie, and the family. I've done all three, and I have to tell you, the veggie, phenomenal. I'm a meat eater, but I did it because my wife is back to doing our vegetarian diet, and we absolutely loved it. The classic meal gives you a variety of meat, fish, and seasonal produce. The veggie is a vegetarian recipe that's plant-based protein, grains, and seasonal produce. And of course, the family is for the whole family, and it's recipes that you'll absolutely love. I absolutely love my HelloFresh meals, and you should give it a try. The recipes only take like around 30 minutes to cook, so they're quick and easy. I like to take my time because I like to make an event. So this is something we do in my house. And it's absolutely great. Here's the offer. HelloFresh.com. Use the code Andrew30 and you get $30 off your first week of delivery. Again, that's HelloFresh.com. Use the promo code Andrew30. You get $30 off the first week of delivery. I want to thank HelloFresh. They're actually great and I use them and I absolutely love them. So keep them coming. And by the way, whenever you sign up, let me know. Tweet them. Tweet me. You know, it helps all of us out. Paul, let's talk about the camera.
Okay.
So you have the 10, the iPhone 10?
Not anymore. I did.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay. You did. So let's compare the iPhone 10 to this. I know this is a generalization and we don't like doing that. What has the better camera?
Oh, yeah. So I can't compare them head to head anymore. The Pixel 2 had a dramatically better camera than the iPhone 10, but the iPhone 10 camera was excellent. The primary area in which the Pixel outperformed the 10 was in low light conditions. The Samsung, which I can compare head to head with the Pixel 2 XL, has an excellent camera too. So I'd kind of say it's kind of on par with the iPhone 10, I guess, and a little bit below that of the Pixel. But like I said, I think there are people who would disagree with this assessment, right? Okay. And what I mean by that is, and those pictures aren't necessarily the best examples of why, but think you may remember, I think I on this podcast discussed this. I think I predicted this. Well, I know I predicted it, I think I did it on this podcast.
I think you're using your fireplace wrong. Yeah. I don't think those lights are going to keep you warm.
Right. So it's an ambient thing. It's talk to my wife. Anyway, when I read about what Samsung had done with the Galaxy S9 Plus, and when I watched the keynote event, you know, where they announced the device, they talked about these two apertures that they had and the automatic ability of the camera to switch between them, particularly in low light conditions where you're in a dimly lit scene, outside or inside, doesn't matter. And it can tell you need more light because otherwise it's going to be grainy and dark. So they use the wider aperture and it lets in more light, you know, to the camera. And I thought to myself, you know, that sounds like something most people would want. And it sounds very much what I don't want, because over the course of using the Nexus 6P and then the original Pixel XL and now the Pixel 2 XL, the thing I value most in that camera is its ability to handle low light differently, which is this. You're looking at a scene like the picture you showed with the candles. There are, in that case, there are multiple little light sources, but in some cases, there's only like one light source. It doesn't matter. But on those Google cameras, when you select a light source, which you do by tapping the screen where it is, what it does is it makes everything else around it actually darker. And the effect that you can have, those shots aren't really good examples of this. You've seen my photos. You understand what I'm talking about. And actually, you've taken photos where you see this as well, in bars and whatnot, where there's a colorful backdrop, you focus on the whiskey glass or something. It's this gorgeous, vibrant combination of blacks and HDR colors, and it's beautiful. I really like that effect. And I've taken stunning low light photos all around the world. In fact, as I travel, I take them outside of pictures of cafes and things and whatever. So here's the thing. So the Samsung does exactly what I thought it would do, which is this. It examines the scene and it says, hey, it's too dark. Let's let in more light. And what it does is it lights up the whole scene. It acts like a flash, but without the annoying flash of light that blinds everybody in the room.
Yeah, so
I think most people will like that. But that's not what I want. I want the picture to look like the thing I'm looking at. And if it's going to be changed from what I'm seeing, this is personal preference. I don't mind a little bit of HDR effect where it's a little more colorful than maybe it is in real life. And I like the effect that Google gives to these low light photos where I can select that light source and it hones in on that thing and then makes everything else darker. And it removes the grain when it does that. The effect is beautiful. What I mean is you don't just take up the camera and click a picture. You take up the camera and you select the light source and then you take the picture. You can do it with the Samsung. It doesn't have any effect. And so to me, the Samsung pictures are too bright. They just brighten everything up.
Yeah, a little bit.
The other two things that the Samsung does is the colors are not correct. I took hundreds of photos over the weekend with my wife and we were side by side, just making sure you're seeing what I'm seeing. The whiteness that it adds changes the color of the picture and it's not color accurate. The Google phone does a much better job with color accuracy, but also in low light conditions, part of the effect of what it's doing softens the photo. You can see it in that, the candle picture you showed earlier. Not only are the colors wrong, they're kind of a reddish brown orangey color in the Samsung photo.
Yeah.
Not correct. The Google one is exactly what it looked like, but it's softer. You know, the edges aren't crisp. Like it's almost like a filter, like a Vaseline filter or something.
So here's the interesting thing. So I noticed that the everything was a little too red on my photos. So there's two issues. One, the selfie mode on this thing, which, you know, I'm way younger than you, Paul. So I still do selfies. But the selfie mode, I absolutely love the selfies, which is pretty cool. how it does like the background blur on a front facing camera. But something that Samsung tends to do is that it softens up selfie mode. The front facing camera, I don't know if it's post production they're doing or it's within the sensor, but they're a little soft. So I did the same photo with my iPhone 7 and this one. And I have to tell you, the iPhone 7 was way more of an accurate. Now Bixby's talking to me. I'm not even talking to you, man.
Yep.
The iPhone 7
wouldn't be a podcast in 2018 if we were not interrupted by a digital personal assistant that thought we were talking to it. It is not possible to record an episode anymore without that happening. Yeah.
It's the third guest on the show. I get guest requests all the time. Exactly. People say, you know, can I be on your show? I'm like, no, I'm sorry, Alexa, or it's taking that spot every week. It seems like it's doing some manipulation, you know, it's softening up the face so you look a little bit better. I mean, my wife and I we looked way better. I mean, more accurately on my iPhone 7. The other thing that I'm noticing is that there's a lot of red, like the reds, it's a little too red when I'm taking these photos. Right. And it apparently this is a known issue. I saw this video the other day. It was a photographer and he was talking about how he noticed that a lot of the photos that he was taking, they look fine on the phone, but when he actually transfers it to his Mac, it's a little too red. And he looked at the information on the phone, and there's a color profile attached to every photo. And when you remove that color profile, it's a way more accurate depiction of what the photo should look like. And he didn't know if this was Samsung doing it or Apple was doing this after it was uploaded, but it may be the same issue where there's a color profile attached to these photos that Samsung is adding, and it's making things a little bit too red because I guess they're looking at it as if you're looking at it on the phone, it should look the best, right? And they're not thinking about looking at it on your laptop. So that may be the issue, and that's an easy fix. You could do it in post, or Samsung could realize that there's a problem and remove that color profile from every photo. Yeah, so that was something that I discovered on it.
There are two things to the camera. Like I said, I think most people will like very much the photos that this thing takes. It's a great camera, you know, whatever. But the other thing that some people will point out to me, no doubt, you know, and it's fair to point out, there are so many controls in the camera app that you can achieve almost any effect that you're looking for. But I would argue that most people, like I said, click and they're done. They don't, you know, if I'm taking a picture of food, which a lot of people do with cameras, smartphone cameras, I'm not going to think to look for a food mode. I'm just going to take the picture. I'm going to hope that this thing's smart enough just to take a good picture every time. As it turns out, the Samsung camera app has a food mode, and it probably, maybe it does improve. I don't know what it does.
So where is the food mode now? I can't find it. I looked and I couldn't find it.
If at the top, you can scroll through a list of, you know, modes or whatever.
Yeah.
It's all the way to the left.
Yeah, I don't have that on mine. Which version did you have?
Hold on, let me look at it. Which version?
It's interesting. So I've had it on my previous versions.
The leftmost mode. So what do you have? What are the modes you have?
Edit camera modes. Let's see. I could do camera mode.
No. Just open the camera.
Rear. Yeah, I see a food, but where the hell is it? I'm in the camera. And then you just scroll to the left, right?
Right.
It's weird. It does not display on mine. It looks like it, the settings.
It kind of blurs around the middle, it looks like.
Oh, now I got it.
There's a panorama mode. There's a pro mode. There's a live focus mode, whatever the frick that is. No, I mean, it's like I just super slow-mo, which I haven't gotten to work yet correctly. AR emoji, which is ridiculous. Hyperlapse. It's like all this stuff. It's just...
It might be a little.
Just want to take a picture. Yeah. I think this is too much for almost anybody. I just think it's too much stuff, and I think people get confused.
Have you noticed that when you're taking photos, have you noticed that it's a little bit too sensitive, and you're constantly hitting the wrong button? Because I've had that happen.
No, I've only had the I've only had the thing for about a week, but I have had the experience where I take more blurry photos with this thing than I'm used to, and I'm a little weirded by it. Like For my photo shots, when I do the comparisons, I try to take two or three with each camera. There were a couple of times where I only took one, and the Samsung one was unusable because it was blurry. And I take blurry pictures with the Pixel 2. I took some outdoor pictures yesterday of the snow, and I posted one of them. You can see it. It's the picture of the chair, the table outside. For some reason, I picked the wrong one, and that picture was blurry. I mean, it's just, it happens, you know, but I don't know. It's just,
It's a very fast phone. It's great. It handles. It's great. I mean, there's.
It is great. It really is great.
Not a good phone. I just don't know if I would be happier or as happy if I had the iPhone 10. You know that's my thought process.
Lineup. I iOS overall, like I said, I prefer to Android. But where the iPhone is right now, I'm not happy with any of the phones. The iPhone 8 Plus and the 8 and the older phones have that kind of old fashioned design. I've used too many of these really tall, thin, you know, bezel-less designs to ever want to go back to that kind of thing. Like I did to me, it just feels old fashioned. The iPhone 10 is a little too small, you know? So the rumors are this year, Apple's going to come up with a bigger version and whatever. And I'll look at it again. I mean, it's a pretty phone. It's made of premium materials. It feels great when you hold it, et cetera, et cetera. But, I don't know. None of these are perfect, you know? So for me, you know, kind of go back and forth, whatever. It's weird because of all the complaining I've made about the Pixel 2 XL, I recently reset it to test the developer preview of the next version of Android. It's actually eliminated a couple of the problems I was having. So there's some problems I can't solve. Like it has audio issues through the USB plug, which is a huge problem for me. And the screen is unreadable outside, but the performance stuff has been fixed. And it takes, awesome photos. And I kind of like the phone now. You know, for a while I really resented it. It had so many problems, you know.
But you think that the Pixel 2's camera is better than this, huh? In your opinion.
It absolutely is. Yeah. And by the way, I will keep testing. I mean, I'm not done. And I will, as part of my review, go through all of those camera modes more because I do like the photography stuff. I'm interested in it. But like I said, my wife and I spent the whole weekend in the world. What? What did you say?
But you know what? You have all these pro modes, but the reality, you just want to pick up the phone and take a photo.
Yeah. And I've taken hundreds of photos with it and side by side with the Pixel camera. And obviously there are exceptions, but by and large and by a wide margin, the Pixel 2 has taken much better photos than the Samsung in all conditions, outdoor and bright sunlight. Indoor and normal, you know, interior lighting and low light conditions inside and out. It's not just me and my own subjective biases about whatever. My son was home for the weekend. We did stuff with him. I subjected my family to these side-by-side photos. My daughter and my son also looked at these photos as we were taking them. And my wife did all weekend and everyone agreed. It's clearly, You can see it when you're in the room and you can hold the camera up and you can see the wall and you can see the color of the in the picture of the wall and you can say, no, that's not what this looks like. And then you look at the Pixel and you're like, yeah, there it is. That's exactly what that looks like.
That's amazing. So many varieties, so many choices. I really don't know which I would pick, you know, like you know, it's a phenomenal. I mean, it's a phenomenal phone, but I'm surprised. I don't love it. You know, I don't love it.
I don't know. So,
but, you know, the Bixby stuff is annoying. You're absolutely right.
You pick this thing up, and you know, it comes on, and it's got that kind of elegant screen wrap around the edges. I've configured it the way I like it, and the screen is rich and deep. You know, it's got really kind of deep colors and contrasty colors, I guess. It's got that text thing going on, which I mentioned earlier, which I love. I mean, I completely understand why somebody would want this. It is a desirable device. You know, whether it's the perfect, you know, one for me is, you know, maybe not, I don't know. But I have my own peculiar and particular needs. Everyone does, right? But I think most people, I don't know. I think obviously if you have an S8 or an S8 Plus, you're not going to get this. There's no reason. That camera's very good too, by the way. My wife has one. But obviously form factor, UI, whatever, it's very, very close. But for everyone else, like, this is a viable choice. I mean, this is something you should look at.
Yeah.
I think.
So my phone thinks that I'm playing a song called Here Comes the Love. Came here for love, but I have no idea why it's telling me this. I'm not playing this. I don't know what song this is.
Right. That's funny.
I don't know what it thinks. Guys, I have, you know, we're going to go into this a little bit more over the next couple of weeks when I have more, you know, once I've adjusted a little bit more. Again, this is not my, you know, this is not the end all be all. This is not my overall review of this. I'm big on long-term testing, and I'm big on long-term usage. That's the only way you could kind of give a fair assessment of it's good. I this is just like 3 days worth. And I criticize these reviewers that get a phone for 24 hours and they write a whole review about what's great and what's not, because the reality is you can't, it's not enough time. It's not. I know it's first come, so, first hit, you know, everybody sees it, but go ahead, Paul.
I'm a little reticent to call out this particular publication. It's one that I used to trust very much. But because of this other device that we're going to talk about, I think the Qualcomm-based NVX2, I know for a fact that on what day they got it, I know for a fact on what day they posted their review, and they did not spend enough time with that to understand what this device is all about. And I'm a little freaked by this kind of thing, because these guys used to be good. And they also did like benchmarks on it, which don't mean anything. This is running a completely different core architecture, or CPU architecture. The benchmarks are optimized for Intel. Like that doesn't show anything, you know, by the way, it is a slow machine, but I mean, so now I'm in kind of a weird spot, because I used to always recommend these guys to people. And it's like, they clearly have, let it slip a little bit in the quality control department, you know?
Interesting. Let's take a little break. I want to talk about our great sponsor, someone that's been with us for a long time, and that's Audible. Paul, isn't it amazing? Like, you're a busy guy, and I'm pretty busy. I love reading books, but I no longer have the time to sit there and read a book anymore. So the fact that Audible makes it so easy to keep up with, you know, these great books, and they're constantly updating their list and constantly new stuff. It's amazing. And they have a great offer for you guys. If you go to audible.com/Andrew, or you text Andrew to 500-500, you can get a great offer. And that's a free audiobook and 30-day free trial. That's, again, if you go to audible.com/Andrew or text Andrew to 500-500, you get a 30-day free trial and a free audiobook to pick, so you could test it out. Is there anything? What's the last audiobook that you got, Paul? Is there anything you listen to right now?
Yeah, I'm always listening to audiobooks. In fact, there's a I think it's a – I don't know if it's a remake or like a new version. I think it's of Pet Sematary is coming out sometime in the next month or two, which I've got in my little wish list that I'm waiting on. But the two that I'm listening to right now is something called West Cork, which is a crime series that takes place in this case in Ireland, which is available free if you have an Audible subscription. Because remember, they have those channel type things, and you can actually, you know, download it and listen to it offline. It's only 7-8 hours. But the most recent one that I bought and I'm also listening to right now is called The Looming Tower. And the reason I got is it was just turned into a TV series on Hulu, and it's about the build up to 9/11. And so they told mostly from the perspective of people in the Arab world, not the United States. Although I guess I haven't hit on them yet, but I guess there are a couple of key people in the government who were kind of aware of what could be happening, and of course did happen. So it's kind of a behind the scenes, nonfiction account of, the decades leading up to 9/11.
Yeah. I mean, that's excellent. I just started the Hulu show. Yeah, it's great. It's great. And you know what? That'll be my next audiobook. And it could be yours if you go to audible.com/Andrew or text Andrew to 500-500. You get your free audiobook, Let It Be the Looming Tower, this week. And you get a 30-day free trial of Audible.
It's the good story of the century.
Yeah. They have unbelievable stuff, and every day every week they're adding more and more titles, so it's amazing. I want to thank Audible for supporting the show. Paul, let's talk about HP, and let's talk about this Qualcomm Envy 2. Yeah. What do you think?
I mean, it's early days. I think the, you know, performance wise, this is going to be the the rough patch. The version I have has 8 gigs of RAM and 256 on the storage, so this is as good as the performance is going to get. And it's not great. I mean, this is very much performs like a low end, you know, Intel. And by low end, I mean Core M, Y series, or maybe even like Atom/Celeron/ wow. Pentium class.
So very low end.
System. Yeah. It's not, you're not going to play games on it. You're not going to develop software on it. You're not going to do any, you know, lots of video editing or anything like that. But that's not what it's for. Right. So, this addresses the part of the market that might be satisfied with an iPad Pro, a MacBook, like the base MacBook, or a Chromebook. And the idea is that when you're out in the world with the device, really what you're doing most of the time is consuming content. You're reading the web, you're reading ebooks, you're reading whatever. You are watching videos, maybe on a flight or something. And what you value is the long, you know, battery life of the device. But you have occasional need to use a real keyboard to create real documents or whatever work you might be doing. And the advantage of this over, say, all those other devices is that you can run full Microsoft Office, right? Mm-hmm. Actually, you can do that on the MacBook. But, you know, the full Windows apps are available, too, if you want them. Now, they don't run great. I haven't done a lot of testing yet, but my experience so far, you know, you do things like bring up Google Chrome for the first time and you sign in and I review a lot of devices, and I'm always bringing new devices online. I go through the same series of steps on all of them. I sign into Chrome, and my extensions install, and new tabs open, and I maybe have to sign into things. And it, man, you can see it like it happens slowly on this device. Like it's leisurely. But as far as like the other stuff goes, so the other two advantages are the battery life thing that I mentioned, and also cellular connectivity. It's an always connected PC. So I grabbed a data sim from Project Fi, popped it in, typed in an APN code, bing, it's up. It works great. So that stuff works great. I need to test it in the sense that, like, you know, in other words, I'm going to take it away from Wi-Fi. It switches over automatically, I assume. I've not yet tested that. I've tested that the cellular data works by turning off Wi-Fi, but I need to test the, you know, how it transitions. And then the battery life. So I this one's pretty cool. So the claimed battery life on this device is 20 hours. You know, about 20 hours, I think is how they say it. And yesterday, before we did Windows Weekly at about 10 of 2, I started my battery life test after configuring the device like I do for all of the laptops that I test. And it basically runs through this thing, and it just goes until the battery dies. And, you know, dinner came, and I looked at it, and it was, you know, 80% done. And I, you know, we started watching TV, and I looked at it. It was like down to 70%. It went to bed, you know, it was down to, I don't know, 40% or whatever it was. And I woke up this morning and it was still going. It was maybe 8 or 9% battery life left. And at about 9:30-ish, I think it was, the screen went dark and it went into connected standby. So I brought it back up. I went through a bunch of, you know, stuff to make this happen. I won't bore you with this story, but it's on the site if you want to read about it, because it's running a constrained version of Windows. So it's hard to do some things. But I finally got the battery report that Windows provides. And the battery life was 19 hours and 45 minutes. And that's excellent. Like, that is amazing.
And so, you know what? The 15 more minutes, it would have been it. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah,
it basically did it. I mean, it had 3% battery left. I mean, I suppose I could have forced the issue. But most of the computers that I've reviewed over the past 2 years, the good ones get 8 to 10 hours of battery life. I've had a few that are in the teens. You know, Surface Book 2 got 15 hours-ish of battery life. That thing has 2 batteries, by the way. So, and it's a humongous machine. So it's got lots of battery. And then the Surface laptop got 13 hours. And then I think below that, we're probably looking at most machines were 10 or less. So almost 20 hours of battery life on the exact same test is really astonishing. Like, that's amazing. The other half of this is real quick is, what I call uptime, and it's a combination of battery life and standby. So this I'll need time to test, obviously, but I should be able to leave this thing unplugged, let it go to sleep naturally, let it sit there for 3 days or 3 hours, it doesn't matter. Keep using it, let it keep going to sleep. And if I did leave it sitting there for days, like, it should lose almost nothing in battery life. And that's the benefit of the Snapdragon processor architecture. They have big cores for power and they have small cores for efficiency. When this thing's sleeping, it's only using the efficiency cores. So it runs in a super low power mode that's not possible on an Intel chipset. And that's why those devices will lose power over time, even when they're sleeping.
I'm curious if we had a comparable Intel version of this, right? To do a head-to-head. I wonder what the Intel one would get.
HP is going to sell that device, Andrew, so we are going to be able to test that soon. I don't remember off the top of my head which chipset it uses. It's thicker. It will require some form of heat dissipation that this device doesn't have. I don't know if that means fans or just passive heat dispensation. What's the word? heat dispersal, whatever. It is heavier. It does not get as much battery life. I think it could be as much as 15, though. It could be in that range. So it's not horrible.
That's not bad.
Or it's not allegedly not horrible. It's not out yet, so I don't have one, but I am going to try to review that as well.
I know we're out of time, and this is not our regular time slot. We're on Tuesdays now, where we have a lot more time to kind of go into this stuff, but have you noticed anything weird with the emulation? Because essentially, soon hardware emulation to run Windows. Do you think that plays a factor in the performance?
Of course, yes. As far as the battery life test goes, I use a store app, so it's not, the battery life wasn't impacted by emulation. The performance absolutely is. And there are other little side issues. It can only run 32 apps right now, and that means 32-bit apps that are in the store and 32-bit apps are available online. So if you download Chrome, you're getting the 32-bit version. I just installed Visual Studio Code, which is a 64-bit app, and it would not install. Microsoft offers a 32-bit version. You have to go kind of hunt for it. That one installed fine. Compatibility-wise, I've seen some good stuff. Like when I install Markdown Pad, it requires two different sets of, I don't know what to call them, like basically developer DLLs from two different sources, one of which is Microsoft. They're both out of date. It's all x86 code. They installed fine. That's amazing. And then there's weird stuff that I sort of didn't expect. Adobe Photoshop Elements is in the store. Should work fine on this. The thing runs store apps. Doesn't install because actually it's a 64-bit store app, and this thing can only run 32-bit apps. So I can't actually use Photoshop, even though it technically, you know, could work. I believe that ARM 64 apps will eventually be made to run on this thing. So if it's a native store app, it compiles to ARM 64-bit, it should work in the future. It doesn't work now. The operating system is actually 64-bit, but right now it only runs 32-bit apps. The problem is Adobe Photoshop Elements is a 64-bit desktop app. I don't think that one is ever going to work, but that one I could be wrong on. It doesn't work now.
That's so much. I mean, I'm curious to see what the next version of this, you know, this is first gen. And I mean, this is great progress and more devices for the consumer and more competition. And maybe this will give Intel a little kick in the butt to say, okay, you know what, we got to get our act together when it comes to low powered, you know, mobility based computers, because they're lower end devices. They're not that great. You know,
yeah, they the path forward for Intel is clear. You know, they have other issues to deal with too, though. Obviously, the Spectre meltdown stuff is impacting the way they develop processors, so they're making changes for future things. The fact that this thing this thing is not going to be a huge success out of the gate. There's no doubt about it. I think most people are going to be disappointed with the performance. So Intel has a little bit of breathing room, but the problem is, Qualcomm in particular already has a newer generation of CPU that's out than this. It offers some incredible performance benefit. It will probably be better optimized for Windows as well. So the next version of these devices running the next generation chip, I think is going to make a big difference. And of course the emulation software will get better over time as well, as these things do. So right now, this is the first one. It's fascinating as kind of a science experiment. And I do think it satisfies some need for a certain population of people, but you know, the performance is, I think it's going to be a negative for most people.
What's the price on that, on the X2?
So I don't know what the version I have costs. The base version is 4 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage, and it's $999. That sounds like a lot until you compare it to a MacBook, which is more expensive, or to an iPad Pro with the keyboard and the pen, both of which are included with this device, mm-hmm. which are extra cost. Those devices are $200 to $350 more expensive than this thing. And then my version has 8 gigs of RAM, like I said, and 256. I'm going to guess it's $1,299. That's the same price as an equivalent MacBook. But you get, of course, pen and touch support, which you don't get on a MacBook, and it comes apart. You can use it like a tablet, which you don't get on the Mac.
Very interesting. Next week, we'll dive a little bit more detail into both these.
Yeah, I'll have more experience
with Samsung Journey.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting. I know you have to go to a meeting. And I have to go to a meeting, actually. I'm at work, guys. I don't know if you guys could see.
You can tell he's at work. It looks like you're on the set of Logan's Run or something, like a 70s sci-fi movie.
That's kind of what I'm in.
THX-1138 or something.
Yeah. Is it the chairs?
Yeah, it's just the whiteness of it. Like the Stormtrooper lounge.
Yeah, I've locked myself in here. And I have to get back to the meeting. Guys, go to our website, gfknetwork.com. You can subscribe to the show. I urge you, please, go subscribe. We're on YouTube. We're on iTunes. We're everywhere podcasts are available, audio and video form. We're not doing a bonus show this week, but if you like the show and you enjoy the show, please fund us, patreon.com/whatthetech. We've been doing it the last couple of weeks. Oh, by the way, Paul, I got a Raspberry Pi.
Oh, nice. So you
got it. Yeah, I'm gonna build it out. I got it last night when I got home, and I got like a little NES case for it. It's like this big. It's cute, tiny, and I got two controllers. So I'm gonna build this thing out, and we'll talk about it next week. I'll probably do that this weekend, and I'll probably take a couple photos of it, and we'll talk about it next week on the show. And of course, we'll continue talking about my journey with the S9 Plus and everything else that's going on. Guys, go to therot.com. All things Paul. Go check it out there. Sign up premium. Great blogs, great posts, great shows. Every day Paul's doing something, so it's amazing. And you can follow him on Twitter at The Rod. You can follow me at Andrew Zarian, and we'll see you all next week. Bye-bye for now.